With the seasons changing and some fun getaways on my calendar, I want to spruce up my warm weather wardrobe. That's why I'm happy I found Quince. Quince offers clothing and accessories for women and also men, even kids and babies. Plus, Quince has housewares like organic duvet covers and shams and so much more. Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because Quince partners directly with top factories. They cut out the middleman and pass the savings on to customers like me and you. Quince works only with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing processes, along with premium fabrics and finishes. What's not to love about that? So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/datingwhilegray for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/datingwhilegray to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/datingwhilegray. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Whether we found the one or are still searching, romantic relationships can be stressful sometimes. And I've learned that when I keep my emotions bottled up, it starts to affect me negatively. I know that therapy is a safe space to get things off my chest and figure out how to work through whatever's weighing me down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, how about giving BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire so you can get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/datingwhilegray today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/datingwhilegray. This is Rock Creek Park. It's an unexpected stretch of glorious nature in noisy and crowded Washington, D.C. It's more than twice the size of New York Central Park, and it's a great place to spend some time alone thinking or taking a walk and talk with a friend, maybe go for a hike or a run. I'm here to meet journalist and author Florence Williams. I've been wanting to chat since I read her book, The Nature Fix. The subtitle is Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. And it illuminated the science of why I felt so good post-divorce, exploring my new hometown's parks and wooded walking paths. Florence's latest book covers a related topic. We'll talk about what she went through and what we can all learn from it on this episode of Dating While Gray, The Grown-Up's Guide to Love, Sex, and Relationships. I'm Laura Stassi. Florence Williams' latest book is Heartbreak, A Personal and Scientific Journey. She wrote it after her long marriage came to a sudden end, sparking an emotional and physical health crisis. In the beginning of Florence's book, she writes that one of the first stages of heartbreak is, quote, feeling stunned, even if you shouldn't have been.
I met the man who would be my husband my first day of college. So I was 18 years old. We dated for 7 years. We got married. We were married for 25 years. Two children. And then one day, seemingly out of the blue, he handed me his phone to look at an email from his brother. And only there was a different email on his phone. And it was a message to another woman. And it was actually in his drafts folder. And he had been just kind of writing these emails to someone he thought he was in love with, but not sending them. But I didn't realize that at the time. Anyway, it was like, you know, it was this just moment of being really shocked and stunned. And what am I seeing? What is this?
Yeah.
And it took a couple of weeks really to sort of, get the story out.
Do you think it was Freudian on his part? I'm just curious.
Yeah, you wonder, right? Yeah. I think it might have been because, we did a couple of years of therapy after that. And at one point he said, "Oh, I'm just so relieved, you know, I feel so much better." I was like, "Well, I'm glad you feel better."
Yeah.
I really don't feel so good.
Yeah. So he was having an affair.
It was an emotional affair.
Yeah. Which yeah. I have to say, people do caveat that, and emotional affairs are just as devastating, I think, than physical affairs, or as physical affairs, maybe even more so, because sometimes I think if they just have sex and get it over with, you know, that'll end the longing or the yearning that often comes with emotional affairs.
Yeah, there actually are some studies looking at this, you know, the effects of emotional affairs on a marriage versus physical affairs or sexual affairs. And, you know, it's kind of all over the map. I mean, in general, one study I saw said that men tend to take sexual infidelity more seriously and women take emotional infidelity more seriously. But, you know, we all take them both seriously, I think is sort of the bottom line, especially, you know, if you really feel like it's interfering with your feelings for each other and your own sort of sense of loyalty and safety.
So, you know, people say affairs are not the problem, but a symptom of the problem. And I wonder if you think your marriage could have continued had you not discovered the emails, or were you actually not personally fulfilled, but thinking growing apart wasn't a good reason to get divorced, and discovering this, you know, email sort of made you confront it?
I think there's no question that we had been sort of growing apart, or we were in a phase where we were, I think, feeling a little bit disconnected. And I guess I wasn't as concerned about that, because I feel like in a long marriage, there are periods of disconnection. There just are. It's like a kind of waving stream. Sometimes there are periods of connection. Sometimes there are periods of disconnection. You sort of come together and you go apart, and you come together and you go apart. And I had many ways of rationalizing this particular disconnection. You know, big new job for him, cross-country move for both of us, you know, demanding times in our lives. I was like, okay, you know, we're sort of doing our own thing for a while. It'll get better. I'm not too worried about it. But I guess I should have been more worried about it.
Well, what can we do, though? I mean, shoulda, woulda, coulda. You know, we all look back, but
you know, I had faith that we could put it back together. And I think he had sort of lost that faith, it turns out.
Yeah. And you said a very descriptive thing in the book, something about you thought the puzzle pieces could go back together, but he was already packing up the puzzle pieces in the box to put it away.
Yeah, he was kind of happy to look at the next toy, I think.
Oh, okay. But so you almost immediately felt physical symptoms with this discovery.
Yeah, I did. You know, immediately I felt like my stomach, you know, sort of fell through the floor. This intense, you know, stress response where, you know, you become suddenly very aware that you're imperiled. I, you know, over these, especially these first few months, I mean, I really had trouble sleeping. I lost a lot of weight. I felt really hypervigilant and anxious and sort of jittery. You know, I burst into tears all the time. I was acutely sort of freaked out. I was really freaked out about not just about the loss, you know, and the grief, but about what the hell is going to happen now?
Yeah.
What comes next? And I think that that's actually a stage of grief that isn't often acknowledged. Some people call it, you know, the sixth stage of grief, and it's anxiety.
I'm wondering, is it the negative emotions that lead to the physical issues, like negative emotions leading to lack of sleep and feeling anxious? And does that then lead to, you know, changes in your blood pressure and your heart?
I think that can happen, you know, if you look at an emotion like rage. But I actually think what I was experiencing and what many of us experience is something more deeply evolved than that. And it's just literally this feeling like you've been left alone, kind of on the savannah, right? So our bodies don't really make the distinction between being abandoned by love and being abandoned, you know, by your close kin or by your family or being sort of cast out. In which case, in our, you know, in the Pleistocene, if you were cast out, you know, you really were at much higher risk of getting attacked or of injury. And so our bodies respond to that on a just very, you know, basic cellular level of, look out, you're about to be attacked because you've been abandoned.
Wow.
So we're going to pump out a lot of extra inflammation in your immune system. The genetic markers in your white blood cells literally change. The types of blood cells, the types of immune cells your body puts out changes in response to preparation for attack. And the nervous system kicks into really high gear. Because we're afraid and we're anxious. And so that, you know, all this is happening sort of subconsciously, regardless of how, you know, angry or understanding, you know, you might feel in the moment. On some level, you feel really unsafe. And so that's what your body's responding to. It's not even really emotional. It's much more sort of, you know, deep, deep primitive parts of our brains responding. And that in turn, turning on these cellular processes in our immune systems. And those in turn are likely to make us more sick. And this is something we see in people who consider themselves lonely. You know, chronically lonely people we know die sooner. We know they suffer from chronic diseases. And this happens in, unfortunately, it can happen in people who get divorced. You know, they have a higher rate, 26% increased risk of death, you know, at least for a while. And it takes about 4 years for our bodies and our immune cells to kind of even just return to baseline, if we're lucky. And some people, unfortunately, don't return to baseline. And that's what's driving the higher death rates.
Yeah. And it sounds like we have to work at it, too. It doesn't just happen, that we have to make a conscious effort to make ourselves feel better. Yes?
I think so. Because heartbreak is not, it's not just a sort of dramatic emotional response. It's actually, as one immunologist told me, he said, this is a hidden landmine of human existence, and it puts our health very much at risk. And so it is absolutely imperative, I think, to take it seriously. If it's happening to you, if it's happening to your friends, take it seriously. Yeah. Do everything you can to get better.
Yeah. Feeling better. We'll hear from Florence about that. Plus, Dating While Gray listeners share their experiences. And no surprise, nature takes center stage. That's after the break.
You can call me Carrie. It was over a year and a half. It was about 19 months we went out. We were supposed to have left in the first part of April to go on a, we were going to Utah to do some hiking. And when we broke it off in March, I had hoped maybe we could still go as friends, but obviously we couldn't. And so I didn't want to give that time back to work. So I had this like 12-day span that I was going to be off. And I was writing in my journal and I said, if I could do anything, I'd want to go to a beautiful place for a writing retreat because I love to write. I Googled and I found, it was like the second thing that came up, this Himalayan writing retreat in the Himalayas of India, exactly the dates that I would have been gone. And so in 3 weeks, I planned this trip to India. I truly believe that it was meant to happen. It just completely like brought down the curtain on the old. It was like a portal to me. And I believe I'm still walking in that portal. And maybe it's best that that friendship be gone, because maybe that would have been a little energy leak or drain or whatever that keeps you, you know, kind of tied back. So I'm just kind of walking forward, and what happens, happens.
My name is Hunter. I am a nurse, and I live with my husband, John. When I moved to San Francisco, I somehow hooked up with the gay and lesbian Sierrans, and I took my first trip to Yosemite. And it was just, I don't know, it was like a whole new world opened to me. The Sierra, the drama of the mountains and everything is just, it's awe-inspiring. And I remember when I first saw Half Dome for the first time, I was sitting on Glacier Point across from it, looking out at it. And, you know, just seeing the whole wide Sierra, I just started crying. And I knew then that I just had to be out in nature, and that had to be a big part of my life. And it has been. In the mountains, in the Sierra, and, you know, there's nothing around. There is the sound of the wind in the trees that just calms me down.
Every time I think back to my childhood, I was outside running around somewhere, and, you know, at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, I might hear my mom calling from the front porch, you know, "Johnny, come home." Later, I started more hiking, you know, when I was on my own hiking and in my 20s backpacking. I kind of learned that the more time I spent in the city, the more time I would need to spend away from the city. So getting out camping or hiking or backpacking was my way of releasing that pressure. If I spent a lot of time in the city, I kind of like feel this pressure of humanity, that there's a lot of people. And if I can go somewhere where I know there's nobody else within a mile of me, or 2 miles, or 10 miles, or even 100 miles, it feels different. And I feel like I can relax a little bit. I have a tough time with social situations. So for me, that release of pressure really helps a lot. I was up to the top of my head with stuff, and took the dog and went out into the backcountry for 6 days by myself. And it was a really tough hike, but it was really worth it.
I wanted to add, you know, I know this about John, and I think we've struggled a little bit to get him out in the backcountry every year. I think he was much more consistent with it before he met me. And what we've discovered in our relationship is that he has to get out there alone without me, and I have to really find a way to help him make that happen. And I think it's been a challenge for us to kind of discover that. And I'm really glad we did. He's a different person. All that tension is drained away. I see it as soon as I see him.
Was that threatening to you when he said, "I need to be by myself"?
No.
There was a year when you wanted me to get a GPS so you could know where I was all the time and be able to check in.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm not going to lie. I worry.
Thank you, Hunter and John. You'll hear more of their story later in the season. Thanks also to Carrie. You heard her story of pandemic love in the first episode of this season. Heartbreak isn't only a miserable feeling, it's a health risk. So I asked Florence Williams, how can we recover?
I kind of divide it into three major buckets. And the first is that we need to do whatever we can to sort of calm down, you know, to get out of that acute state of anxiety, that fight or flight state. Because when we're in that state, there's no other healing that's really going to happen. You know, for me, it was going outside into nature. It was hanging out with my friends. It was moving my body, and so on. That's the first bucket, the sort of calm piece, calming down. And then the second piece is really connection. So this we know is kind of an antidote to loneliness. It's also an antidote to heartbreak. So I think when we're heartbroken, we feel like it's a very singular event. We feel that we're going through this alone. And even though heartbreak is a sort of universally felt experience, it's not very common. You know, we may only go through it a couple of times in a lifetime. And so, at least on, you know, from a big relationship. And so we don't necessarily have friends going through it at the same time. So I think it's really important to connect with the friends you do have. You know, if you need to ask for help, that's really important. Be vulnerable with your friends so they can be vulnerable back. Reach out to other people who may have gone through this experience. You know, connect to people you don't know so well. Make new friends who you can identify with. For many of us, connecting to nature is also actually a surprising antidote to loneliness. The third piece is kind of a surprising one, and it's actually purpose. Purpose and meaning. So what can we learn from this event going forward? What lessons can we take away to help other people? This is where really interesting things start happening to your immune system. And we know this because for the book, I did this experiment where I worked with a researcher at UCLA, and we tested my sort of genetic markers and my white blood cells, my transcription factors, sort of determining which blood cells I was making. And he's been studying this for decades, and he knows that, you know, lonely people have different sort of blood profiles than people who aren't lonely. He'd never actually worked with a journalist going through heartbreak before. So that was kind of fun. We did it in real time, you know, pretty close after the split, and then, you know, for a couple of years after. And what he's found in his research, you know, over the decades is that it's not necessarily lonely people who start hanging out with other people, you know, and volunteering or whatever, who are joining a church group or what we know, whatever. Those things are helpful, but they don't necessarily change your immune markers. What actually make you healthier is finding purpose and meaning in your life.
Yeah. You talked about being in nature, and we mentioned The Nature Fix, your previous book, one of your previous books, and I really loved it.
It's something I am passionately sort of advocating for people, that when we feel connected to nature, it really does calm our nervous system. We know this from lots of studies, measuring people's kind of cardiovascular responses to different environments, measuring their stress hormones, measuring their moods and sort of general states of optimism and so on. And all this stuff really improves even just after 15 minutes of being in a pleasant natural environment.
15 minutes. That's easy to do.
Even 15 minutes. It's easy to do it. You don't even have to sort of exercise through it. You can sit under a tree and drink a cup of tea or, you know, whatever it is, where you can sort of hear the birds and take some deep breaths. It's actually very profound. Yeah. Lots of changes.
Although I have to say, for people who aren't familiar with you, you are a nature badass. I mean, running the rapids, how you did like a, 30-day camping trip or something?
Yeah. Well, after I wrote The Nature Fix, you know, I was very convinced that being in nature can help us heal, you know, from many, many things in life. But in that book, I only sort of look up to the 3-day effect, like what happens to our brains and our bodies after 3 days outside. And I was like, oh, this is such a whammo, this divorce. Yeah. I'm going to try 30 days in nature. So yeah, I undertook this 30-day river trip, which, you know, I don't necessarily recommend for everyone. and it didn't even necessarily help on every level, because it was still kind of a big enough adventure that my nervous system was still pretty amped up. It wasn't always relaxing outside, but
you do mention the feeling of awe, which is interesting, because it sounds like you used, I'm not judging, but you used psychedelics to achieve this feeling of awe, which, I guess, does it make it easier to feel awe as opposed to, I don't know, meditating or doing yoga?
Well, I tried to do a lot of things to feel awe. So one of the most influential to me psychologists I talked to early on said, you know, yes, people who get divorced have worse health outcomes in life, but we know that there are some people who are more resilient. And I was like, tell me, what's the secret? I want that resilience. And she said, well, we think it's actually the people who are the most open to beauty, most open to art, or, you know, however it is that you start to feel goosebumps. Goosebumps is kind of a sign of awe. Right? Sensing awe. The people who are most prone to awe and beauty are the ones who actually tend to kind of, you know, bounce back really, really well. And I thought, okay, so that determined the course of my next 2 years of writing the book. I was determined to just cultivate beauty everywhere I knew how, find some awe. And at one point, you know, about 2 years in, I talked to another psychologist, Dacher Keltner, he's kind of like one of the primary researchers studying awe and the science of awe. And he was the one who said, you know, you might want to look into taking psychedelic mushrooms, because it's like awe technicolor. And I thought, okay, that's what I want. I want to do like next level awe.
Yeah.
So I did and tried it. I had never done them before. And I worked with a therapist. Again, I wouldn't necessarily recommend this for everyone because there are a lot of risks associated with these substances. And it's very important sort of how you take them and in what context and so on. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was actually a surprisingly helpful sort of modality. Mm-hmm. I had these really interesting visions of how my future could be beautiful, oh, you know, and not scary. And I think it helped me kind of separate more easily and kind of more finally from my marriage and from being so attached to kind of who I was in that marriage.
You want to talk a little bit about sex?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see where to start. I guess, you know, I was 50 when my marriage, you know, finally fell apart for good. And I definitely was feeling bad about that. Like, oh, I am too old to really do this again and no one will ever find me attractive and blah, blah, blah. Big self-esteem issues going on there. Not feeling attractive. And I wasn't looking, you know, for an immediate kind of, rebound, you know, or fling, but it actually just kind of happened. And I was so knocked over by how good that felt, just to kind of feel lusty and to feel desirable and to feel that desire. It, for me, that felt very alive making in a way that was very just self-affirming on sort of every level. It's not necessarily going to feel like that for everyone. And I think that it's important to, you know, if you're going to have a rebound, it's important to find someone with whom you feel safe and yes, that you're not going to feel like sort of instantly betrayed again right away, because that is really hard. And turns out, you know, my first sort of go out the gate was not really a successful pairing kind of on any level, aside from, you know, how good the desire felt. But then I sort of got back, you know, in the saddle as it were. And found that the physical touch and the physical intimacy was very healing. And certainly there is some science, of course, about how physical touch does directly calm us down. It, you know, releases oxytocin. It inhibits stress hormones like cortisol. It can feel really safe and wonderful to do that. If it's, again, someone you feel is not going to kind of be threatening or horrible.
Yeah.
Where's the science showing that rebounds are a bad idea? And in fact, there wasn't any. And what there was some science indicating that having a rebound could be really good for your self-esteem, could help you put more distance between you and your ex, could give you sort of a more optimism about the future and about your own sort of attractiveness. So yeah, that's great.
Is there anything else I need to know?
Let's see, lots to talk about. You know, I guess I would just tell people to be patient with their trajectories of healing. You know, I think many of us think it should take a year. You know, after a year, I should feel great. I should be totally back on my feet. And unfortunately, you know, it's usually not that fast. Like I said, the research seems to suggest that it takes about 4 years for our bodies to return to baseline. And some people take longer. So be patient with yourself. You know, don't feel terrible if you still, you know, feel sad and angry and all that stuff, you know, for a long time. Yeah. Be patient. And again, work hard, though. Be patient, but also work hard to try to do what you can to recover, because your health depends on it.
My thanks to Florence. She's now 5 years post-split and says she's feeling great. Her youngest child just left for college, and she recently sold the marital home. She's figuring out where she wants to live next, and she's in a long-distance relationship. They met after Florence sent an email to a group of folks she describes as loose acquaintances, letting them know she was ready for romance and did they know anyone who was available. An email, what a great idea. But I think what's more important to remember is something else Florence told me. While it's scientifically proven that romantic relationships can be great for our emotional and physical well-being, we don't have to be in one to reap the health benefits. There are other ways to love and to be loved. And in the end, it's love that really matters. Dating While Gray is produced in partnership with North Carolina Public Radio. For more on the show, check out datingwhilegray.com. That's also where you can find links for sending voicemails and emails. I'd love to hear from you. I'm Laura Stassi. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.